What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast, the number one sports podcast. I'm not even going to say in the Southeast Metro Detroit region like I normally say. I'm going to say the whole dang Midwest, possibly all of North America. This is Teeing Up with CNB. I'm your host, Connor, the C of the CNB. As always, with the B himself, Vladimir. What's going on, man?
I'm doing good. Got back from or was in Indianapolis this past weekend, kind of the end of my month and a half long of just flurry of trips. Was a great time. I kind of got to play another super cool golf course. I've been spoiled with the last two that I played to pretty much end my
Nice.
golf season, so I'm very excited with that. Had a great time down in Indy. Every place we went to was awesome, so no complaints there. Other than that, I'm looking forward to this upcoming weekend to be able to kind of lounge around like a zombie and watch kind of the college football regular season Super Bowl of just matchup after matchup. And other than that, I'm doing great. I have nothing to complain about. How are you?
I'm good, man. I was also out of town this weekend, played four rounds of golf in 3 days. My hands, like the palm of my hands, are still like kind of sore from that. And I had the thought yesterday of like golfers do that. Well, I guess four, they play 4 in 4 days, not 4 in 3 days, but still. I won a lot of money this weekend. There was a round, the four man scramble. Won all four closest to the pins and all four par threes, and we won it. So I made myself some money this weekend. But yeah, other than that, nothing to complain. We got another week going on. It's the halfway point of my semester, so I got a nice little Monday off on Monday. So can't complain about life right now. Just kind of chugging along, going through what is a great October for the fans of the Detroit sports teams. Unless you root for the Pistons. I guess that's just a segue into our first topic, which is another Tigers update. Huh? What? Yes, 2 weeks in a row we're talking about the Tigers. And man, buddy, they're a team of destiny right now. You got 13 rookies on a 26-man roster. We're recording about an hour after they just won game three of the ALDS to go up 2-1. And for the second straight day, I guess not the second straight day, they played Monday. For the second straight game, they went 3-0. It's the first time in franchise history since I saw 2013, I think, since they threw back-to-back shutouts in the playoffs. They're rolling. I guess to get into the series, like you said before, we even started recording game one, who cares? It was kind of the downside of the every man throws strategy the Tigers use, and that I mentioned, and that you're once you get one bad start to start, the game's kind of over and it can get out of hand fast like that. And that's what happened. That game was 5-0 early, 7-0 final. And then game two, Skubal throws out set, two games in the playoffs, two games shutout. He's just a bulldog out there, 8 strikeouts, 7 innings, only 3 hits. Got out of two huge jams in the fourth and sixth inning. Two big double plays. The second one, huge. First and third, one out, gets his double play to get out of it. He was spectacular. And I love him just because he, I don't know if you watch, but like he's yelling at the Cleveland fans. He's
Did see
taunting
that.
them. He's everything that's good for baseball. He's just an absolute tank, bulldog, all the words you want to say. And the guy just knows how to pitch. And then today you just a game where you didn't hit the ball well again for probably this. How can I even be remiss on how game two ended? Carey Carpenter coming off the bench, facing this Emmanuel Clase, who people want to basically give the Cy Young to over Tariq Skubal. I keep on wanting to call him Tyreek Hill. Tariq Skubal. This guy is, I believe, like. Hitters are hitting like 0-90 against him. He's got like a 0.4 ERA this entire season in 70 innings. He's given up 5 runs the entire season. The guy's nothing short of spectacular. But when Skubal goes out there and throws 7 shove innings, and then this guy gives up a 3-run jack to Carey Carpenter after he gave up 2 hits to the bottom to the 8 and 9 hitters in the Tigers order. that's all said and done. Skuball is your Cy Young. Thanks for coming. Just a team of destiny type stuff right there, where you get arguably the best closer, definitely the best closer in baseball right now, and you score three runs on him in the ninth. And then today, a game where you really didn't see the ball well. They're able to scratch off two in the second inning, and then one more, and I believe it was the fifth or sixth inning. And this Cleveland staff is good. That bullpen, I think you saw, they threw six guys today, and that they're every bit as good as the Tigers bullpen. They're one of the better bullpens in baseball. The Tigers have just been able to pitch their way out of some jams these last two games, and the bats have come through clutch. Carey Carpenter, Torkelson, who was 0 for 14 with like eight strikeouts, gets a big hit late in this one to kind of seal the deal. And it's just an every man up mentality. I said it last week. The guy, AJ Hinch, is going to play everybody in every spot. You saw Tyler Holton, who has started multiple games in these playoffs, comes in the ninth and closes the game. Guys are being put into positions they've never been put in. But like I said, when you've been doing this for months, guys are used to this, and guys are used to being uncomfortable. And that's just a result of what the Tigers have been right now.
Yeah, I'm not going to add too much more technically there just because I don't fully understand the sport. But from watching these last two games, you can kind of see what this team's built on. It's a lot of guys who can barely hit the ball with a tennis racket. And it seems like every single one of them is also basically a gold glove contendee. I mean, I watch Parker Meadows in the outfield, and I don't think I've ever seen a ball
Yeah.
drop on him. It
Yeah,
it's
he glides. He's
He's hit.
fast. He's fast and 6'5". Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and I guess the specific play I'm talking about was, I think it was top of or bottom of the ninth in game two, where it might
Yeah.
have been bottom of the eighth, whichever one it was. It was basically right after the Kwan guy had that incredible diving catch,
Yeah,
and
great catch.
the
Saved the game for
Indian
them right there.
I keep saying Indians, the Cleveland Guardians have a chance to
There
kind
you
of
go.
get an extra base hit of their own, and Parker Meadows just says, "Nope, I'm built like a shooting guard. Good luck." You've got guys. I think was it Vierling today with the backhanded grab up the third base
Yeah.
line. You've got Torkelson, who can make plays on the defensive side but cannot hit a baseball. More often than not, he did hit the baseball when it mattered today. And like you said, it's a team of just destiny guys. And how far can you ride this? Like there's no explaining this kind of team. You don't have
No.
anybody who hits for power consistently. You barely have anyone who hits for average consistently. You've
Yeah.
got one starting pitcher who happens to be the best starting pitcher in baseball, so can't really re get mad about that because he's kind of an automatic win at the moment. Hopefully he stays that way. Just what are you supposed to do in the other games when Skubal's not pitching? It's ridiculous what this team does, how they do it. So more power to them. Tomorrow's a massive game from a obviously closeout standpoint and from a planning standpoint. If you can close out tomorrow, Tarik Skubal gets to start game one of the ALCS and potentially start game four and game seven of the ALCS should that be needed based on how certain rests go. So that's incredibly, incredibly important. Go on out there and close the deal out. Send the Guardians home and just give yourself some rest and watch the Yankees and the Royals play with a little bit of pressure off your back.
Yeah, I agree. And the Skubal point's good. I mean, it's not even so much of him needing to start game one. Since the ALCS is a 7-game series, you're still probably going to get the same amount of starts out of him if he goes game one or two. But to me, it's not having to use him in game five means he doesn't have to go on short rest. He'd be going on, I believe, 2 nights shorter than what he's normally used to going on. I guess 1 night shorter. But still shorter rest than normal if he has to go Saturday. And you just don't really want that to even be the case. Say you win that game five and then he goes around and has to throw game two on probably short rest again. It's just not a good precedent to start, regardless of the fact that he needs to be out there in pretty much every elimination game, no matter what, at this point.
Agree.
So that's it for the Tigs. They keep it going. They're in a great spot. I mean, by the time we film next week, they'll be game or two deep into the ALCS, hopefully, if they make it. If not, we won't. Let's hope there's another week of Tiger Talk, so to
That would be
speak.
great. I'd love to see some more semi-championship level sports in this or semi-final level sports in this town after the NFC title last year. But yeah.
Yeah. And Detroit showed out. I mean, it was the most attended playoff game in Tiger baseball history today since they opened up the standing room only. Very cool to see. Moving on, college football. I mean, this was just the week that I said at the end of the show last week. Granted, I didn't, I kind of like listened to myself in my approach, but I told people they didn't need to watch. I told them that it was a bad week. There weren't a lot of good matchups. And that didn't matter because we had, I believe, six ranked teams go down on Saturday. Is that number sound right?
I think so. I mean, I know there was five of the top 11, and it should have been six of the top 11 with Miami. I have no idea how they escaped that game. We came back from the bar Saturday night, and we saw the score, and it's like, oh, cool, Miami's cooked, and we started
39
getting ready to
38,
go to
yeah.
bed. And then, what? What? How? You look at the final score, and it's like, how did they escape that? But yeah, do we want to quickly just
UNLV was the six at 25.
Do we want to quickly do Michigan State?
Yeah, I don't know if there's much to talk about. You played another much more superior opponent. A game where, again, I thought they were somewhat frisky, especially defensively in the first half. And you just kind of were out talented. There's just better players on their side of the ball. I don't really have much
Absolutely.
to add besides that.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'll say is maybe shout out to Dylan Gabriel for keeping us in that game longer than maybe we really should have been. But
Yeah.
yeah, only so much you can, like you mentioned, the a Big Ten team going out west historically is horrific. It's not just Michigan State. I think I spoke about that just Michigan State last week. I was looking at more stats. It's the entire Big Ten. Anytime someone goes out west, they lose, except for I think
Yeah,
Indiana, who
I saw
hammered
that.
UCLA a couple weeks ago, but it just doesn't happen. So, man, more power to them. You're 3-3. I think you get the bye week this week going into Iowa. So get healthy if you can, kind of like with the Lions, get healthy if you can and get ready to beat a team that's absolutely beatable in Iowa.
I will say this. This is the first game where I really noticed them be hampered by them being super afraid to let Aiden Childs do anything. Like in the first half, when they were kind of going back and forth there with the turnovers for a little bit, like you could tell they had no faith in him and that they was just run, run, run. I mean, the stat, he only threw the ball 17 times in the game. Schuster came up and went 5 for 5 and led the last drive down the field. I am going to throw it out there. That if Aiden Childs puts up another stinker against Iowa, I consider the battle of the backups is what Michigan, you can call Michigan, Michigan State for the quarterback battle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would absolutely agree with you. I just don't think that's ever going to happen. I think this is a season that's been kind of thrown, not thrown away, but it's just been thrown to please go learn how to take care of the football. Please go learn how
Yeah.
to throw the football, how to read a defense, and we'll see you in 25. So
Yeah, Chami Schuster is like 24 too, so.
nothing wrong with that these days, man. You got seventh year guys, eighth year guys. Mr. Tuttle's 25 over in Ann Arbor. So
Yeah.
anything's possible, but yeah, not much more to say about Michigan State.
The biggest one of the weekend, should we go there next?
Alabama Vandy.
Yeah.
There you go.
0 and 60 against top 10 teams as a program was Vanderbilt going into that game.
Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to leave with that stat.
Oh,
I just thought that was a crazy stat.
I thought you were pausing for dramatic effects. My
No,
apologies.
I wasn't. And to be honest, a game where, I mean, it was a multi-score game with
It was.
5 minutes, 2 minutes left in the game when they kind of scored that backdoor touchdown to make it a five. I won't call it backdoor because it wasn't like it was backdoor cover or something like that. But to make it in that game, I didn't really get to watch much of it, but it's gonna start a trend, and this week in general, I guess I'll say my thoughts on the whole of college football here. in that I actually think you're going to see more of this from schools and these Power Five conferences that were not necessarily football schools in today's NIL era. And I actually think you talked about how NIL is going to make the rich richer, and the sport is dead because of conference realignment, yada, yada, yada. I actually think you're going to see more of this where we don't have a definitive best team this year. We have teams that can go into some of the bottom teams in their conference and not be confident that they can go and get a road win. This is something that 5 years ago, Alabama would have won this game by 100. Granted, that's because Nick Saban would have never let like this. He would have like found a way for there to be a lightning delay before this game ended, with them losing. But I think you're going to see more of this, and it not only speaks to Alabama, but the weekend with all those top 10 teams, 11 if you count USC going down, in that this is a frisky season that these guys that were competing for depth chart spots at Alabama can go and play at these middle of the line schools and at least compete on any given Saturday with these top teams. And that's why I think you're going to see more of this, and that you don't know who the top team is 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks into the season. And we don't this year. And that's what this week speaks to, I think.
Sure, I don't feel like getting into an argument here. I don't fully agree with it, and we're never going to change each other's minds. You've got Diego Pavia, who's like a sixth year senior, so it's almost kind of like the March Madness of you're playing men against boys, and eventually the men will get the better of them, even in a football thing.
Right, but that's the point. That would have never been the case 5 years ago.
That's because 5 years ago the COVID year hadn't happened. As soon as all these 28-year-old seniors get out of the sport,
But
I'm not.
in football, like, you can play forever anyways.
Maybe. I don't. I look. I it's a freak of nature game. You're right. 0-60 all time against, I think, what, top five schools. 0-30 against the top ones or whatever that Vanderbilt stat was. I think this Alabama team maybe also kind of got exposed a little bit on the defensive end. You talk about
Yeah.
things that would never happen under Saban. I don't think it's necessarily the losing. It's more of the Nick Saban's teams never gave up this many points to bad teams. They just didn't. They had fundamental defenses, and if you beat them, it was because, you caught their offense on a day where they couldn't put it together and kind of got them on a low scoring game. So that no, it was sensational. The celebrations after, you see the fans down there on the field ripping the goalpost down, carrying them 3 miles down
Yeah.
Broadway through Nashville, which that's so cool. Getting to the
Yeah.
river, tossing them in the river, $100,000 fine. I'm sure that's the only time a school administration has been happy to pay money for anything. And I'm actually kind of shocked. I mean, if that happened to Michigan State, I'm sure they just raise the price of tuition a little bit, make the kids pay for it, because we have a horrific administration. This is just me going off on my own tangents here, but
Yeah,
no,
that was
that
crazy.
was awesome. That's just I've got bones to pick with that, but it was incredible. I absolutely agree with you there. I can't fault that.
I guess I don't really have much to say on, I mean, the other ones. Missouri got absolutely pumped by A&M, but I feel like that's kind of how the SEC is rolling this year,
Missouri
the
was
way that,
also horrifically overrated.
yes, agreed. They only beat Boston College by like 6 points. Tennessee, I didn't watch a second of this one, but again, seems like more of going back and forth. The SEC, I just think, like, I don't want to say how this has always been, but like, especially with NIL, where again, where I think like if you're at Alabama, you can go to a middle of the tier team like Arkansas and go ahead and play, and that this is going to happen more often, I think, than not in this era. But I don't have much to add since I didn't watch this game. It seemed like from what I heard, Nico had a very freshman-esque game. I saw the game ended on him basically just running out of bounds. So.
Yeah, when we were out at the bar originally Saturday night, there was a group of Tennessee fans right next to us, and these were like obnoxious human beings. We're like, I'm talking 5 yard pass gets completed, they're up out of their seats, fist pumping and like chest bumping. Like, dude, what are you doing? So I was very, very excited when I saw them lose. I kind of wish the
Yeah.
fans were still there just so I could chirp them. but they looked obnoxious. They were obnoxiously loud, and it was just not a fun time. So I'm glad Tennessee lost. And yeah, not much more there. You mentioned Missouri. What's the other? I mean, Michigan.
USC.
Yeah, I mean,
USC,
USC.
Minnesota seems frisky for Big Ten. It's the second week they've done kind of this. They gave Michigan a scare last week. Like, I think both those teams are heavily overrated. That's probably more of why you saw that. But let's get into Michigan, I guess. Quarterback problems galore. They couldn't make up their mind. Is it Orgy? It's clearly not. What was the first kid's name? I don't even remember at this point. They've played so
Jack
many.
Tuttle, Davis Warren.
Yeah, Warren. But now we're on to this Tuttle kid who I believe is a fifth-year transfer.
He's not a kid, he's a man. He's 25 years old.
Yeah, he is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 6-year senior. Second year in the program, played at Indiana. He's never even attempted more than 80 passes in a season, so he's never really been a starter before in these 6 years. So,
Yeah, if you want to
I
know,
like your season's just, is it just done? Like, I don't know.
I mean, yes, I was talking to some Michigan friends after this, and there is in their mind, there's fear that 6-6 is a very real possibility. Why? You hold
I
on.
think that's just Michigan fans freaking out because they're not the best team in the world like they
Okay,
have been
well,
the last 3 years.
can I level with you here? Are
Yeah.
they going to beat Oregon? No.
No.
Are they going to beat Ohio State? No.
No. Okay, so there's four losses.
Which means that between
Okay.
Illinois, Michigan State, and Indiana, if you lose two of those games, you're at 6-6. You can't tell me there's not a world where they lose
Yeah.
two of those games.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm not.
Illinois is on the road. Indiana's on the road. Indiana's good too.
I'm not saying there's some they should be like minus odds to end up 6-6. I'm just saying there's a possibility it happens.
I mean, yeah. I guess if you, now that you break that down, there's a very real chance they lose to Illinois and Indiana, especially with both being on the road. Wow. And I think Illinois sucks personally, watching them play enough.
I
They're
agree.
for but Indiana's for real, I think. Like, that's a really losing game. And I'm not even gonna, come on. Michigan State, really? You're better off throwing Northwestern
Can I
in
say
that.
one thing? Can I say one thing? I've seen worse Michigan State teams beat better Michigan teams.
Yes,
All
I
I'm
know. That's
saying.
true. It is true.
No, I mean, like, I'm kind of kidding, but at the same time, I'd love to like be that nail in the coffin of like, we made you 5-7. Boom.
And this, yeah, this was an ultimate Vegas nose game. Because Washington, for all intents and purposes, sucks. And they
Yep.
were a 2-point favorite going into this game. I know it was a home game. I know it was a night game on the West Coast, but man, that was surprising to me.
Yeah, I agree.
But what do we know? 10-point win for Washington. They covered.
Yep.
I think that's kind of really it for the big ones. The U Boise State, are they going to play a real team this year? Because I think that's what it's going to take for me to give this kid the Heisman.
Is Oregon not a real team?
Oh, they did play Oregon.
He
You're
put up
right.
200 yards on him. Hell, he beat
Yeah.
Oregon by himself, and then two special teams touchdowns brought the game back.
The answer is they're not playing. The most real
But
team
no,
they'll play the rest of the season is UNLV,
yep.
probably.
And UNLV is no longer ranked after their loss to, I
Yeah.
think, SMU or Syracuse or whoever that game was.
Syracuse. Yeah, but another 185-yard game for him. He averaged 14 yards a carry and three touchdowns. I mean, it's funny because it's really hard now. I think it's been 3 years since DeVonta Smith, 4 years since DeVonta
It was
Smith.
the 2020
And then,
year, so however you
yeah,
want to count
and then
that year.
before, it's been 10 years since we've had a running back.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, correct. I just agree with
Yeah.
you.
That it's very hard for these non-quarterback to win now, but this is kind of the perfect storm of this guy going off like this. And I really actually think it's two non-quarterbacks that are probably 1-2 right now, and that's Travis Hunter and this kid.
Completely agree.
You got Jalen Milroe who now again throws a stinker against Vanderbilt, is probably out unless he massively turns it around. Because what does it usually go to the last few years? A quarterback on one of the best teams, basically the best quarterback on one of the top teams. Jalen Milroe, dud out right now. Carson Beck has arguably taken a step back this year, in my opinion. Quinn Ewers has been hurt for multiple games. He's out. I don't think anyone's ever won at missing that many games. So who's next at the quarterback position?
Cam Ward, if Miami keeps beating nobody as well.
Yeah, that's like there's a long way to go before I think he's in the hunt for that too, just
Completely.
given his name.
Nope,
But
completely agree.
so that's why I think this. I mean, it's very early right now. We're only halfway through the season, but I think it's 2-9 quarterbacks right now leading the race, which is very rare to say.
Completely agree with you. Some fun stats for Ashton Jeanty. We were looking at some of his betting lines on Saturday before the game kicked off. He was minus 5,000, or I think it was minus like 50,000 to have a rushing touchdown. It's like, how do you even? He was minus odds to be over 3.5 touchdowns or over
Wow.
three. Like, it's stupid. And other thing about Jeanty, which is hilarious, is I think some of the people that maybe, I don't want to say deny him, but some of the people that want to see the award go other ways say, oh, well, he's playing nobody. Well, you know what the other part of playing nobody means? That means you don't play the second half of games.
Yeah, they won by 32.
This is so in the 5 games they've played, I think this is the second or third time he sat second halves. So you want to sit here and say, oh, he's playing nobody? Sure, but I'll make the counterpoint. If he was playing somebody, his stats would be even higher.
Yeah. You're right, though. I think the Oregon game will come back to like help his case. 192 yards. He's got 2 games over 200 yards. His worst game is 11 carries, 127 yards, and 0 touchdowns. So, yeah, I don't know like how you deny that keeping four. And like I said, are they going to play anybody? Like it's they, I think they also play a 4-1 Oregon State team. Okay. Yeah, maybe they don't really play anybody.
Listen, you want to talk about not playing teams? Miami. Miami's 6-0, but they're not going to have a ranked team on their schedule all year.
No.
The
And
ACC sucks.
they're gonna benefit because they're gonna, no matter what happens, they're eighth right now, and that's probably where they belong at the moment. But they're gonna be a top 4 seed, thankfully, because they don't play anybody in that conference.
Can I give you one more interesting point about ACC sucking? Is Clemson back?
Clemson is kind of back,
Clemson's
aren't they?
offense has looked somewhat legitimate the last couple weeks.
Yeah. I had a friend who I slept in a hotel room who we both are friends with, who knows a lot about football, tell me that he thought Cade Klubnik was good now. I said that was crazy. And then I looked at his stats from the last couple of weeks and I said, oh my gosh, Cade Klubnik must be good now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Clemson's back. Maybe Dabo was right last year when he said people should buy all the Clemson stock when they were 2-2 or whatever that, or 4-4, whatever that BS was.
Let's see who they play.
I mean, nobody. Wake Forest, Virginia, Louisville,
They play
Virginia Tech,
Louisville,
Pitt, Citadel, South Carolina.
Citadel, Pitt. Yeah, Pitt. So Pitt's basically their only game left.
Yep.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, and then looking ahead next week, just quickly, I think is worth mentioning just because it is a good week. The granddaddy of them all is definitely the Oregon Ohio State game. Then you got.
Red River.
Yep, sorry, Alabama, Tennessee. Michigan's going to play, going to Illinois. Georgia and Texas are going to play. Yeah, am I looking at the wrong? I am looking at
You're absolutely
the
looking
wrong
at the
week.
wrong.
Yep. Sorry, Red River rivalry. So that's Texas, Oklahoma. Penn State travels to USC. There it is. Ohio State and Oregon. Ole Miss and LSU. I guess it's not quite as good as I thought, but it's still.
Blame USC for that. USC should have made
Yeah.
another kind of quote unquote double, a double ranked matchup, but they keep losing games to Big Ten teams
It's
that
only a
should be
4.5 point
losing.
spread. The spread is very, Vegas is very afraid of these Big Ten teams going out west.
Dude, the other thing is, it's not just them going out west. Even the West Coast teams starting to come out. They're afraid to travel.
And I'll like say give this one credit. Penn State's not really like they're not really gonna go in and win by 30 by to any decent team, I think. They're just kind of a we're gonna beat you 27-14 and you'll like it.
You'll like it. I love that. I got no more college, moved to the NFL.
No. Yeah, move to the NFL.
I'll start with some of the off-field stuff that was a kind of a premonition from the on-field stuff. The New York Football Jets become the first team to fire their head
Yeah.
coach. I think,
Shocking.
I mean, I think he was absolutely railroaded by Aaron Rodgers. I don't care how many Pat McAfee podcasts he goes on and says, "Oh, I'm appalled by fans who say that this is the case," because until or unless I see a report that Robert Saleh is like a double mass murderer and they had to get him out of the building because he was going to just he was just killing people, there is no excuse
No
for this to
reason.
be other than Aaron Rodgers got mad at him. Aaron Rodgers has spent time publicly this season getting mad at him. And you look at some of the other stuff. So here's some fun facts about where the blame should be and where the blame went to. This offense with Mr. Upgrade on Zach Wilson, Mr. Superstar, Double State Farm, Double Check, or whatever ayahuasca
Forgot
he
about
wants,
discount double check. I totally forgot about that.
whatever he wants to call himself. This offense has just as many points scored through 5 games as they did last season. And that's supposedly with an upgraded offensive line and a better quarterback.
Right.
So, uh-oh. And I mean, I'm one of the I've been one of the people that's defended Aaron Rodgers maybe more so than the average person does, and maybe more so than he really ever deserved, because this guy's a bum. He spent the last 2 or 3 years kind of being average. You looked at all the problems he caused in Green Bay, where even though they were winning, there was always that little bit of, "Oh, well, you're not going to give me a weapon," and Matt LaFleur versus Aaron Rodgers, the power struggle of who's really winning them these regular season games before they inevitably got embarrassed by the 49ers in the playoffs.
Not only that, but he was one of the main reasons Mike McCarthy was fired.
Yep. Even though I can't really fault that, McCarthy was an absolute bonehead. But
Yeah.
that's not really for this discussion. The last thing that makes this, and like once again kind of points to me about the fact that like this was not some kind of just joke. It's not like they're 0-5. The Jets are 2-3,
Yeah.
and they're playing on Monday night the 3-2 Bills, which means, oh, you're not happy that you're 2-3. You were quite literally playing for the division lead 6 games from now, and you fired your coach. You don't do that. I know Woody Johnson comes out there and says, "Oh, this is the most talented team ever in the Jets history. We should be better." It's like, no, you just need to sit there and realize what's going on. You don't have to go 17 and 0. Nobody goes 17 and 0. What you have to do is be better than the rest of your division so you can secure home playoff games and then figure the rest out. Look at the Buccaneers last year, playing an ass division, get to play the Philadelphia Eagles team, which on paper should be exponentially better than them. But those guys hate their coach, and you win a playoff game. You don't need to be, not everyone gets to be the Chiefs to go 12-5, 13-4 every single year. Like, you just have to realize what you are. And this is classic Jets being Jets, an incredibly dysfunctional franchise. We'll talk about some other dysfunctional franchises here in a second, but it's hilarious. I mean, you've got a quarterback who's not as good as he once was running a football team. It's incredible.
Yeah, and my first thought in how the Rodgers thing has gone this year is, did the Tom Brady experience in Tampa skew opinions on franchises of how much power we should give to a 40-year-old quarterback that has had a good career? Because it worked out so well there, but unfortunately, it seems like that was Tom Brady. That was an anomaly. He's the GOAT. That's only he could do that. Because Aaron Rodgers is an example of the Jets trying to do that, and it just kind of backfiring in their face so far.
I would agree completely. I guess maybe moving from one team with problems at the quarterback position, or maybe problems elsewhere that should be aimed at the quarterback position that aren't, to a team with problems at the quarterback position that is getting aimed at the quarterback position, but nothing's getting done about it because they can't do anything about it because of his contract. And if you don't know, as I sit here and kind of rant quickly and speak faster, I'm talking about the Cleveland Browns. We've beaten this dead horse before, but let's keep doing it. Deshaun Watson's actually kind of upgraded, in my opinion, to one of the most interesting stories in football. Obviously, there's the off the field stuff, which we're not even going to mention because that's not interesting. That's disgusting. I'm talking about from a pure playing standpoint. He managed to will his Cleveland Browns team against a bad Washington defense to 6 points. And I understand the box score says 13, but I do not count garbage time touchdowns towards your stats. That doesn't matter. But no, we don't do that here. Not on this podcast. So like how can you sit there and put up 6 points on a bad Washington defense? You look at this guy, and it's not just it's how you when you watch him play, it's some of it's almost like Aiden Childs in the way he can't read a defense or can't put any touch on his throw. Some of these passes are going 10, 15, 20 yards out of bounds, and it's like, was he throwing it away? No, it was. You look back, it's a clean pocket. He can't throw the football anymore. And I think he's gotten to a point where he's mentally checked out. He knows everybody hates him. He knows his contract is guaranteed, so they cannot touch him. Or if they do, he's going to get his money anyway. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy where he keeps playing worse and worse, but the Browns keep having to reiterate, well, this is our quarterback. This is our quarterback because they put themselves in one of the most unique and worst situations in sports history. Like, he's gotten so bad. Like, and I know you talk about, oh, well, he's got the money, so you can't bench him. This is like baseball. You are better off paying him to not play for you than you are paying him to play for you because he's now a net negative.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add on that front, man. We kind of have said it week after week that much this is turning into one of the worst contracts in all of sports history. And that just comes to fruition again. I do feel a little bad for Kevin Stefanski. I think he's actually not Kevin O'Connell. I know I called him Kevin O'Connell that last week. Kevin Stefanski, and that I don't think he's a bad coach. I think he's stuck with the worst quarterback situation in the history of football. And he's going to, unfortunately, it's going to be his downfall as well, Cleveland.
Yeah, look around kind of to another team with maybe some QB trouble, but not at the same level. The Las Vegas Raiders have officially benched Gardner Minshew. He was not able to recreate that spark he had in Indianapolis last year. You've got Devontae Adams seemingly on his way to New York to go play with Aaron Rodgers again. This team cannot run the ball. You've got very like unsubstantiated. I don't think these are true, but you've got rumors that Max Crosby wants out. And if so, that's the most Raiders thing ever. You basically let Max Crosby pick your head coach because he said, I want Antonio Pierce. And you're like, okay, I'll get Antonio Pierce. And then 6 weeks into the season, if Max Crosby wants out, that's the most Raiders thing ever. Now, again, I don't believe this, but if it's true, more power to these morons. And it's just classic Raiders. And where I was going to go with this is we keep talking about dysfunctional franchise after dysfunctional franchise. It's so much fun as a Lions fan, and it feels so almost redemptive to see these kind of recent history poverty franchises like the Jets, like the Raiders and the Browns, and even to a lesser extent, the Jaguars and the Bengals all go through more and more stretches of just shit while we're actually competently run for once. It's so nice.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add on the Raiders front. I don't, who even is the backup?
Aiden O'Connell.
Okay, he's still there. Okay.
Yeah, the guy who torpedoed Michigan State's season in 2021, but I'm not salty about that. Who's counting?
God, I forgot about that. Him and Bell.
Him and David Bell, the only two guys who could think on that football team, and Mel Tucker left David Bell wide open on multiple time occasions.
Yeah, they went
Muppet.
for a 50 burger on us. Probably the game of the week, Ravens Bengals.
Yep.
Ravens, you can officially say, are back. Bengals, I don't like want to say season over, but because they play the Giants and the Browns the next 2 weeks, but you got to win both those two games if you want to even have a shot at this. And for me, the defense for them is so bad that they're just, I don't know, like how amazing Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase were in their bag on Sunday.
Yep.
It's the best we've seen them look. I know Ja'Marr Chase is kind of a Raven killer, even though they lost. They go for a combined 90 fantasy points
I like how
and
that's our
still
metric.
lose the game. Yeah, I was going to say the stats, but no, I had them both on one team and they went for 90 points. So,
Way to show off to the rest of us peasants.
yeah, no, that's all right because I got another team that scored like 90 points in 3 weeks. So, what was I saying? But I don't think as good as they've been and as good as they were on Sunday, gonna be enough to overcome just how bad they are on defense, is my point.
I agree. The Browns have made it a habit with Joe Burrow starting slowly, and now I guess part of that reason might be because Joe Burrow usually gets hurt very early on in the
Yeah.
season, but they usually start slowly. They're now 1-4. Zach Taylor might get canned for it. And unfortunately, I can't even shit talk Burrow, and I'm glad you focused on the defense because I saw some fun stats. This Bengals offense actually has scored more points than the Minnesota Vikings offense, and we all talk about Sam Darnold like an MVP candidate.
Yeah.
They've scored more points than them. And now it's only by a couple. It's not like they're blowing them out of the water, but they've got more points than the Vikings, and they're 1-4, and the Vikings are 5-0 for what
Right.
they've done. So I think the problems definitely lie on the defensive end. But if you want to talk about the game itself, this was just a classic, maybe AFC North matchup. Bengals basically led by 10 the entire time. And then right at the end, Baltimore cuts it to 3, and Joe Burrow kind of throws a reckless interception when they probably should have been running the ball and killing clock. Ravens are able to go down the field, kick a field goal, send it into overtime. Overtime is where it really starts to get fun. Ravens win the toss. Freak fumble with Lamar Jackson, where I think he couldn't, like, or they snapped the ball and he wasn't ready. Couldn't pick it up. It squirms around for a bit. Baltimore gets it pretty much already in, or the Bengals get it pretty much already in field goal range. And then they follow that up by running three conservative play calls. They get to a point where it's a relatively long. I think it was like a 55-yarder for McPherson, who's a pretty good NFL kicker, and you have a horrific snap, followed by a muffed kind of hold, followed by mentally everything from McPherson's thrown off. So he just kind of swings his leg and he pulls it. And then on the very next play, Derrick Henry runs it down to the 3, out trots Justin Tucker, Ravens win. So wildly entertaining game. That's kind of what NFL football is all about, where all these
Yeah.
teams are so close in kind of stature and every game's fun. I think I was looking at it, the 1 o'clock slate, pretty much every game, I think bar one or two, was a one possession game right until the end. So great there. Maybe talking about more of kind of specific games. Thursday night football this past week was probably the
Yeah.
first time there's been a good Thursday night football game ever.
Ever.
Yeah, the Bucs and the Falcons play a thriller, and it's a game that the Buccaneers have absolutely no right to lose. They kind of lost that the way the SOL Lions used to lose games, where
Yeah.
you have 1st and 10 on the other team's 28-yard line with 1:44 left, and you somehow turn that into 4th and 25 to the point where you're too far away to comfortably kick a field goal, so you have to punt. You follow that up by playing prevent defense, which only prevents you from winning. You follow that up by losing a coin toss, and then you follow that up by a defensive back jumping a route, and you give up a 50-yard touchdown in overtime to lose. That was just, if that was a game the Detroit Lions lost, I'd probably break my glass table by slamming my fist into it because I'd be so pissed off if I had to talk about that.
Yeah.
And it's, thank God we don't have to talk about it with emotional attachments. We can just talk about it with analytical ones. That was a game that the Lions used to lose, and it was hilarious, and it was so much fun to watch.
It was a great game, and it's two teams that are kind of in the same spot for me right now, where they're just like this frisky, probably look like playoff teams, not really sure what they are yet thing, and to see them go back and forth like that. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm mooting my point here by if they're going back and forth like that, do we really learn anything more about them? Probably not in this case scenario, but two teams to watch out for moving forward, in two pretty bad divisions, I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
So
I guess maybe a little bit more of storylines. I'm actually going to give Daniel Jones a little bit of credit. He's the guy that I think's become the pinata around the league for the last
little bit.
12 to 15 months. And if you're going to do that, that's okay. But you also have to turn around and give him credit when he plays well. He's got the Giants walking into Seattle without their best player in Malik Nabers, who was out with a concussion. And he leads him to a win. So he's obviously not, it's not like he's lighting, he's not putting up video game Lamar Jackson MVP season numbers up, but he's doing just enough to win football games. He's doing just enough to torpedo the New York Giants draft
Yep,
stock, and he might
that's
play his way
exactly what I
into
was going
being the
to say.
starting quarterback for the Giants in 2025.
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say. As a Giants fan, it's frustrating because he does show stretches or flashes. He does go on stretches like this where he looks like a competent quarterback, and you're just like, maybe. But the season as a whole, you'll still only win like five games, and instead of picking in the top three, you're picking ninth. So.
Yep. Couple other things. The 49ers, I think there's trouble here as well, and maybe not like huge
Yeah.
trouble because I do trust them enough to come back from it, but you blow a 23-10 halftime lead on a second half where you had four offensive drives and they looked like this. Interception, turnover on downs, fumble, interception. That cannot be an NFL kind of summary of your half. I don't care who you are, that's horrific. CMC, it does not look like he's coming back anytime soon,
No.
but you still have Debo, Kittle, Ayuk. I know they're slightly banged up, and that's just kind of how the 49ers operate, but it's a defense you'd expect to be better. And now your last two losses, I know it's sandwiched in between a drubbing of a bad Patriots team, but in two of your last three games, you've blown a 14-point lead at halftime against the Rams and a 13-point lead at halftime against the Cardinals. So you've got some potential trouble there. The NFC does not look like what we thought it would. I mean, we spent all summer talking about the Eagles and potentially the Cowboys and the 49ers being the Lions' biggest kind of threats, and now we turn around and we look at ourselves and our biggest threat's the Minnesota Vikings.
I'll add this, and maybe I'm crazy for saying this, Christian. Without Christian McCaffrey, I know they have all these weapons. I know they're not 100% healthy right now, but that's not a team that can get back to the Super Bowl without Christian McCaffrey right now.
I would tend to agree with that. The last thing I wanted to talk about is the NFC North, which has become kind of the best division in football. We talked
Yeah.
about this being the best division in football in the summer, but you watch the teams play. It's the only division in football that has every single team above 500. You've got the Minnesota Vikings, obviously, as we just mentioned, the surprise of the league, one of the two undefeated teams left, a team that is just out coaching everybody, a team that has Sam Darnold playing at an MVP level, and a team that just keeps stumbling, rumbling, bumbling forward. It looks like there's no hurdle they can't kind of overcome. Hopefully the Detroit Lions in 2 weeks are one of those hurdles they cannot overcome. I actually don't know if that game is in Detroit or Minnesota, but wherever it is, hopefully there's a Lions win there just so we can get back on top of the standings. But those guys are great. The Packers were able to stay afloat without Jordan Love for two games. He
Yep.
comes back, and while he made an incredibly stupid play in the end zone this past weekend, where I don't know if you saw this, he basically does a Dan Orlovsky, except instead of running through the back of the end zone, he just throws it to the wrong team and throws a pick six.
I
So
didn't see that.
yeah, no, it's a pretty ugly, pretty ill-advised throw. It's just one of those where you have to say, you know what, shit, like they got me for a safety. Just take the loss on the chin. But he just launches it and throws a pick six. So there's that. But they're good. Obviously, the Bears have looked better, but I'd like to see them play a real football
Real
team
team,
before
yep.
fully announcing them as back. Because I think you and I could grab our friends and we might be able to put up 30 on Carolina. So I'll just kind of reserve my judgment for now.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. I unfortunately didn't get to watch a ton of NFL football this week. So, as far as storylines for the week, I'm a little behind. So, I'm glad that you were able to kind of pick us up on that. And it's a Lions bye week. So, we're not don't have to analyze that full game like we usually do.
Correct.
So,
Yeah, I've got nothing else. If so, we've made it to kind of another episode, another week. Next week we get the Detroit Lions back. We lose Michigan State, which okay. Hopefully we'll still have the Detroit Tigers to talk about as active playoff teams, not as a
yep.
team whose season has ended. And we'll be able to kind of talk about, like I said at the beginning, the college football regular season Super Bowl with all these matchups.
Yep. For those that made it this far in the episode, thank you. And because it's a bye week, go Lions.
I'm going to leave everyone off with the famous saying of everybody's favorite Tiger fans, eat 'em up,
Eat 'em up,
Tigers.
Tigers.